The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's good? Welcome in. We're Grant and Danny. It's Wednesday, November 13th, 2024. We will take you up to 6:30 on The Fan. We're going to scout the opponent. We'll go behind enemy lines, talk about the Eagles with Jody McDonald from Philly at 3 o'clock. And Austin Eckler is on the show today. Give us the lowdown on the Commanders prep for Philly. That is at 5 o'clock, brought to you by IT Cadre. Looking forward to our weekly appointment with Austin Eckler. Danny, it's coming quickly tomorrow. Commanders,
already
Eagles,
here.
You and I are getting on a train in the morning to head up to Philly.
Yeah, it is wacky and wild. It is all happening. It's going super, super fast. I'm still sort of processing, still Pittsburgh. Now is the day we sort of, okay, let's kind of gently turn our attention to the weekend. No, sir, it's to tomorrow. This is a big stretch, man. Two really good teams coming into the previous weekend with Pittsburgh, 12-4. Now their records are both better than that, 7-2 and 7-2 respectively for Pittsburgh and Philly. Two best teams you're probably going to play all year. You throw Baltimore into that mix as well. You do that within 4 days. That is not an easy ask for anybody, let alone this team that's kind of, you know, outkicked their coverage a little bit, exceeded expectations. But here they are. A really tough challenge, and they'll be undermanned, it looks like.
I'm sure many of you guys are going to the game. If you are going to Philly, let us know. We're going to be doing a live show at a sports bar about 15 minutes from the stadium. So if you're going up earlier in the afternoon, I've already had someone reach out to me, tell me they're getting up there between noon and 2. They want to come by the show. Hit us up at Grant H. Paulson for me, Twitter and Instagram, at Funny Danny for DR, and we will give you our location. You come on by and watch some of the show as we're out and about in Philadelphia before we all go over to Lincoln Financial Field for the biggest game of the year, the biggest game in a couple of years. And just as a reminder, on Friday, we are continuing the Friday Field Trip Series. Even though there's no game this weekend, we're doing a post-game Thursday Night Football show on Friday. Win or loss, hopefully we're talking about a win and not a big, fat, juicy L. But Friday Field Trip Series from Third Hill Brewing Company, that is in Silver Spring off of Georgia Avenue. That's where we're going to be this Friday from 2 to 6:30. Danny, you and I didn't know what to make of going to Maryland because we hadn't gone in a long time as a show. Normally, we do really, really well with our events in Virginia. But the good people of Maryland showed out this past week in Rockville. And now we're taking the show on the road to Silver Spring.
Every one of these has been awesome. They've all had their own kind of unique personalities and characters. And, each experience has been a little bit different. But also what's common, what's the refrain has been, whether it was Leesburg or Fairfax or Bethesda or North Bethesda, or maybe it's Rockville, north of Bethesda, I'm not really sure. But people are just so joyous. Everybody's so happy. And it's always nice that we're involved in that gently. Like, there's a part of it that I guess that we're relevant to some of you folks.
Very small part
of it. It's like really like it'd be, you could do two cardboard cutouts and probably be similar in terms of a lot of reaction. But people are just excited. And that's what's fun. Like, we haven't had one of these in a while, right? You go back to 2019, people were excited. That was awesome. That's when sports are fun. That's why you go through all the pain and the heartbreak and the sadness for the fun times. We're having the fun times. We're in the fun times right now.
I always say that my favorite Redskins team ever in my lifetime, certainly in my childhood, in 99, was the Brad Johnson-led you know, Stephen Davis led Washington Redskins right before the turn of the millennium. And one of the reasons I think that was one of my favorite teams ever, Danny, I was 10. It was my formative years as a fan. They won a playoff game, which they don't do. And they obviously had a lead in round two of the playoffs and were on the precipice of the NFC Championship. So it's probably not a coincidence that was the best team in terms of how far they got, how close they were in the playoffs toward the NFC title game. But I also think it was the last time that they were good in the beginning of the year and then good in the middle of the year and then good at the end of the year. That's not to say that I didn't enjoy the five-game winning streak to make the playoffs in 05.
Yeah, those are cool moments.
The four-game winning streak after the tragic death of Sean Taylor in 07 to get into the postseason. Or the seven-game winning streak when they were 3-6 in Griffin's rookie year in that amazing and immaculate 2012 campaign. Or the four-game winning streak when they were 5-7 to get into the playoffs in 2015, the last time they made the playoffs. But that's what they had to do. Because they weren't particularly good. They had to win 5 or 4 or 7 or 4 in a row to get into the postseason. The last time they were just good at the beginning and good in the middle and good in the end, just a normal 10-win good football season, circuit to circuit, was 1999. And they are on their way, it looks like, to that kind of a year this year. Whether they win the division or they don't, whether they make the NFC title game or they don't, whether they win a playoff game or not, they are a good football team,
yep,
just like they were in week 2 and week 3. It's now week 10-11. If nothing changes with a soft schedule, they should be that in week 17-18. This should happen more than once every 25 years. But it's been 25 years, and we're getting that again. And I think that's part of the Friday fun that we're having on this field trip series. But to that point, it's going to be a hell of a lot more fun out there if they beat the Eagles and we're celebrating a win come Friday. That would be an awesome little pep rally.
Yeah, I mean, your division record would speak for itself. You'd be up at the top. You'd own the tiebreaker for the moment against Philadelphia. You'd have the easiest part of your schedule in theory. I mean, you never know how teams are going to turn and start playing or whatever. But on paper right now, the easiest chunk of their schedule is coming up. You didn't know that, by the way, back in September. When the schedule comes out in the springtime, who would have thought, yeah, that November game with Dallas sure is a cakewalk. You would never think that for a team that's won 12 games a year for three straight seasons. But that's where we are, right? It just so happens. You go Dallas, the Titans, at New Orleans, all teams that are probably picking in the top 10 at this point. So you couldn't ask for more. If you were able to combine that by splitting against two teams that, again, are combined 7-2, or excuse me, 14-4 over the course of the season, that would be tremendous. That would be an enormous, enormous thing. Now you can compound. Now you can start talking about 11, 12 wins. You can get to a place that's pretty special that this organization does not go. Everybody else gets to once every so often, some teams more consistently than others, but that's rarefied air around here, and I'm not taking it for granted.
Yeah, bonus points if we see in Philly for our live show tomorrow. We'll tell you where. Just hit us up. Friday, though, Silver Spring in the DMV, back in our area. We expect to see a lot of you. Should be a great show. And then we're coming back to Virginia and Falls Church next week. We'll give you the details on Friday on that. Before we get into the Commanders and the news of the day, some disappointing news, frankly, on who's not playing for Washington against Philly that we will pass along in about 2 minutes. I do want to get to a little Caps news. You can see if you're watching on 106.7 The Fan's YouTube page that I've got my Caps hoodie on. I'm going to the game tonight. I also have my Caps hat on. I will be there at Capital One Arena for the Toronto Maple Leafs and your Washington Capitals, who are 10-4 on the season. They're outstanding. The Capitals traded for Lars Eller yesterday. That Lars Eller. There's not two guys named Lars Eller. The same Lars Eller. You know, old Tiger, the Great Dane, the guy that scored one of the most important goals in organizational history in Game 5 of the Stanley Cup against the Vegas Golden Knights as the Caps put the finishing touches on their only title ever. He had been in Pittsburgh. I'm going to just say that he was on a spy mission, that we just sent him over there to, like,
it makes you feel
break
better.
Some stuff and take a bat to some things in their locker room. And he'd been there for the last couple of seasons. But 17 games into the year, 4 goals, 7 points in, he's been playing decent hockey for them. He's playing about 16 minutes a night. The Capitals brought Lars Eller back yesterday. That is not what I had on my Tuesday evening bingo card.
Sending it back in along the left-hand side. 7:40 to go. Puck in front. Connolly with a chance. They score! They score! The puck on a rebound for Lars Eller! Eller gets the rebound and puts it home, and Washington leads it 4-3 with 7:37 to go. The Tiger powers. pouncing at the moments that he can potentially be the hero.
That was 6 years ago.
Sorry about it.
I just got chills.
Sorry about it.
Thank you, John Walton. Thank you, Laura Zeller. That was the moment, the first moment, truly. Everything else before that, I thought, we might win the Stanley Cup. And right then, I'm having chills as I'm thinking. I'm talking to you with chill bumps right now.
Mm-hmm.
I just became an old lady in the South. Chill bumps. It was at that moment that I said, with 7 minutes to go, oh, my God, I'm about to be a Stanley Cup champion. And it was because of Lars Eller, who they reacquired yesterday.
What's his role going to be?
He's going to be the third line center. This is not like a maybe he'll play, maybe he won't. Good news, bad news. Because I like the young guys, and I love Hendrix LaPierre. Hendrix LaPierre has not played well. He's a little bit lost right now, can't find his game. So rather than waiting and developing him in the NHL and trying to work this out, I wouldn't be surprised, like, I haven't seen the details, but if he is at Hershey for the next several weeks or whatever, or I don't think he gets better just being scratched, but this is a indictment on that third line center situation. So Lars will be their starting third line center. It's the one line that hasn't been really, really good. He will help them on the penalty kill as well. He gives them depth if somebody gets hurt, you know, in the center situation as well. But I think they are going to essentially tap into him and let him run that line for now. And it's, you know, if you're a Hendrix LaPierre guy like I am, it's a little bit disappointing because he got off to a really, really slow start. But Andrew Mangiapane and Jacob Virana are on that fourth line with Lars Eller. It's the only line that's not rolling. If you look at Ovechkin, Strome, and Protas, those guys are near the top of the NHL in scoring and points per 60 minutes right now. If you look at their fourth line, which is outstanding with Dowd and Duhaime and Radish, they've been awesome. Their second line might be their best line. That's McMichael and Luke Dubois and Wilson. They got three lines rolling. The third line has been kind of the one that they can't quite iron out. And so they're bringing him in, I think, to be a starter on the third line.
So this is the only thing that's a bummer about doing what they're trying to do, and it's a cost you have to pay. Right? Because Ovechkin just won't stop scoring goals, even as a dude that's about to be 40.
I would like to apologize, too, for that. Because I know people want to do this, like, rebuild and be bad, and that, you know, the playoffs every year gets old. So I do apologize. Ovi's got 10 goals in 14 games.
It's hard to hear.
And the Capitals are near the top of the Metro. So, sorry about that.
So frustrating. But if you could afford to be more patient, if this was, you know, more towards that other end of the pendulum like you're talking about, right?
Yep.
Like, if this was... I don't want to say full rebuild. If you want full Nats on it, then of course you let LaPierre figure it out, because that's the best interest of the organization for near and far. Same with the Wizards, right? I don't mind seeing Alex Sargo 0 for 7 from 3. Take the next one, kid. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I want. I want the growth. But problem is, that's a veteran group right now, and the most veteran guy is Alex Ovechkin, and if he had 0 goals through 14 games, I'd go, "Ugh. All right, maybe let the kid figure it out." He doesn't. Sorry. They're good.
They're also not punting on LaPierre. He's going to be a massive part of their future. It's just in this moment right now, he doesn't quite have it. They're really good and in win mode, and they're bringing in someone who's going to help him. And by the way, if Eller struggles or looks old or doesn't play well, and LaPierre starts putting it together in Hershey, or, you know, gets an opportunity at some point, and you scratch Lars and has a three-point night, then you can roll with him. It's not like Eller is a guy that has to play in every single game. He's going to get a chance to, for sure, initially. And he plays a game, I think, on the third line that's going to work with the guys that they have. But anyway, I just thought that was awesome. If you're a Caps fan, one of those things, if you know, you know. Lars coming home. That would be the equivalent of, like, the Nats reacquiring, like, Adam Eaton at a point where they're about to go make the playoffs or something.
Oh.
Like, just a core, major part to their championship. All the memories come flying back from the celebration all around town. But to the Commanders we go, because they play the Eagles tomorrow. Dan Quinn just met with the media about an hour ago and addressed the health of the team. One very notable player ruled out. This is what he had to say.
I'll rule three players out. That will be Belore, linebacker Nick Belore, cornerback Marshawn Lattimore, and kicker Austin Seibert. All the rest of the guys practiced. And we'll huddle up tonight and see how they do. But those are the three that that won't play, ruling them out today.
So it sounds really good on Brian Robinson. I've thought that previously this year, and it didn't mean anything come Sunday. But I think all systems look like they're a go there. The tackle situation is still in flux. He was pretty coy on Lucas and Wiley, other than to say that they both ramped up and did a little more yesterday.
Mm-hmm. So
hopefully one, if not both of those guys can go.
Yeah, that's different than we've already ruled them out. That's that we might yet rule them out, but this is it's more encouraging to be on or to not be on that list that he, of the names you just mentioned.
Marshawn Lattimore's out.
Yep.
Again.
Mm-hmm.
Two times in two games since they acquired him via trade. They also don't have Austin Seibert, which had the kicking situation not worked out well this weekend, maybe you'd feel a little bit different about. But Zane Gonzalez made two field goals, made his extra points. Kickoffs weren't a problem, I didn't think. I think most of us have gone from going, oh, no, you don't have your kicker who was automatic, to you heard that today and you're like, oh, that's no problem. Zane Gonzalez can handle it. It's funny how that changes in a couple of days.
Isn't that nuts?
And very well, he could miss a big kick and we could be right back to where we were in terms of fearing a kicking situation going sideways going into last week. But for right now, it feels like Gonzalez can do the job. Belore is a big loss if you believe in a little thing called special teams coverage. He's an ace. This is a former Pro Bowler in that regard who's helped them a lot. One of the reasons they're great on teams, I think, is because of guys like him. So I'm not trying to trivialize his being unavailable. But we got to go back to Lattimore. This was the game that I circled when they acquired him, knowing he had a hamstring, to say, man, I hope he's back. I hope he's healthy. I hope he's ready. Because I got to deal with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith probably. Probably because he's on the injury report with a hamstring, although he's been playing through that the last several weeks. I guess it's possible with a short week maybe he doesn't go, but I would think he's going to play. Your eyes probably light up here.
I would say he's probably real comfortable.
Hamstring probably feels a little better when you watch the tape.
Looks your time in that cold tub, a couple more foam roller sessions. Yeah, he'll be good to go. I'm anticipating him playing and having an enormous game. So this, to me, is the point. Like, the reason you go 1-800 New Orleans Saints is for the two games against Philadelphia and, you know, before Dallas melts down, the game against Dallas because of CeeDee Lamb. Like, to win the division, you're going to have to cover some of these guys. And he was the answer to me. So it's a bummer. I get it. Like, if you know, it's only 72 hours of ramping up, for a total of 96 before the actual game starts from Sunday to Thursday. So if you couldn't go Sunday, it's not insane to me that a soft tissue injury, hamstring, doesn't get right well enough where you can be counted on for Thursday. So I understand it. It's just a bummer. Like, it's frustrating to me. That's all. I'm not mad at anybody. Like, the team's doing the right thing. The player's doing the right thing, I'm sure, rehab-wise, et cetera. But, like, to me, the whole point of Marshawn Lattimore was for this Philadelphia game, part one, and then part two later on in the season.
Yeah, I hate responding to individual bad takes on Twitter or otherwise. Like, I don't like wasting time because one guy thought this thing. But I actually think this is a prevailing enough thought out there that it's worth addressing. I got a tweet from someone named Chris who said, "It may appear trading for a guy that's always hurt and shows up to your building hurt may be the first misstep by Adam Peters." Saw another couple people saying, oh my gosh, this damaged goods. Like, why did we make this trade? He was not acquired for last week against the Steelers, right? Lattimore was not acquired for this week against Philadelphia. He was not even acquired for this season. He was acquired because he has 2.5 years left on his contract. He was acquired because you get three postseasons of him. To try to help this year and to help next year and the year after. He would not have been acquired if it was just a two-game deal. They would not have brought him in. It's not like they thought, oh, he'll help us beat the Steelers and the Eagles, and then we'll loan him back to New Orleans. Uh-uh. That's not what this was. This is a, some point this year, he's going to help them out a lot down the stretch and into the playoffs. And then you get two more years. The side effect to the deal is that you get better this year. That's the side effect, positively. When you're watching the commercial of the drug and they go, side effects are nausea and you can't stop going to the bathroom and whatever else. Like, side effect to trading for Marshawn Lattimore is you might have a better chance to beat Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. That's the side effect. It's not coming to fruition that they didn't have him for the Steelers. They're not going to have him against the Eagles. But they traded for him because for the next 2.5 years and three postseasons, theoretically, you've got this guy on your roster. So I think people that are overly reactionary to this trade after quite literally 2 weeks, basically, are not understanding why they made it and are foolish. I don't think that's a big enough faction of the fan base to matter, but I think it needs to be stated at least that who cares that he's not available in the grand scheme of things from 25,000 feet up in the airplane as it starts to descend. It doesn't matter that he didn't play in these two games. Now, in the moment, it stinks because I don't know if they thought he wasn't going to be able to play in the next couple. But I promise you it wouldn't have changed the fact that they gave up multiple picks to bring this guy in for the remainder of this year and the next 2 years. Now, if it goes badly the rest of the way and he doesn't play this season, and then they release him before the start of next year, and he doesn't play for the team or something, then we could talk about the mistake that they made and how ridiculous it was to trade for an injured guy. I bet you that's not going to be the case. I bet you they knew what they were getting into, and he's just not healing as quickly as maybe the best case scenario was. Or they might have even known, by the way. They wouldn't have told us if they did.
Because you remember there was pending a medical
right, with
the trade.
But they might have known when they acquired him, and you might have known if you're Adam Peters, hey, you tell Dan Quinn, hey, he's probably not going to be ready until the mini bye after Philly. Or maybe the thought is, hey, we'll get him back after the bye week for the last month of this season. And then you still have him for your stretch run in the playoffs, and then the two-year deal that you sign him to effectively to have your new cornerback one moving forward. But the reaction today when he was out, as if they miscalculated and a woe is me and here we go, pretty funny. Like, I just think it's silly.
So I get a portion of the sentiment, because if you're talking about this year, this is the biggest game they've played. And him not being available is a bummer. So, like, reactions that correspond to that, I understand, but I think your point's 100% right. This is not for this week. The trade was not for this week. In my mind, it's the reason you acquire a player at that position of his caliber is to deal with teams like this, and this is when it falls on the calendar. If it was 3 weeks from now, and they played Philadelphia back-to-back, like they did that weird bit with the Giants a couple years ago where they played the Giants, had a bye week, and then played the Giants again. If it was like that, and he couldn't play in those games a month from now, you know, okay, we can maybe have a larger conclusion to it. But I guess it's I'm talking on both sides of my mouth. It was a way of saying, like, the whole point to me is not so that you can have Marshon Lattimore against the Carolinas, the Tennessees. The point to me is not only this year, but in future, in my division and teams that I'm going to play have wide receivers that right now with my current roster, I can't cover.
Yeah.
I cannot stop them. I have no answers at all, period, full stop. Now, hopefully, I have one. So not having them is a bummer.
So let's go right there then, next. Can they defend Brown and Smith well enough to win this game without them? Based on what you've seen with how they've handled wide receivers. Guys like Ja'Marr Chase just getting open for a 46-yard touchdown, making it look easy. The Bengals going up and down the field. When they have played teams that can sling it, two weapons on the outside, they have not really had answers. Do you think Benjamin St. Just and this secondary can step up their game enough without Lattimore tomorrow to win this football game? Obviously, Peters and the front office acknowledged at the trade deadline they were not good enough without Lattimore to accomplish their goals moving forward. Doesn't mean you can't do it for a day or for a couple of weeks. But where are you guys on their chances to beat the Eagles without Lattimore, their chances to have a strong game in coverage against this elite tandem, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith? 800-636-1067. Let's get to that next on The Fan.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Grant and Danny on The Fan. The Commanders play the Eagles in Philly tomorrow. We'll be at Lincoln Financial Field, but before that, we'll do a live show from a bar in Philly. So if you're going up there, let us know. We'll tell you where we'll be. Thanks for making the show part of your day on this Wednesday. Will the Commanders be able to slow down the Eagles' receivers without Marshon Lattimore? Felt like when they acquired him, they would need him for this Eagles game because A.J. Brown torched them. He basically derailed Emmanuel Forbes' rookie season single-handedly last year. I mean, what he did to him
was rough.
In week four was like illegal in 19 states at the time. And I'm pretty sure it's become illegal in six more states since. They passed some laws after the election. A lot of people worked some things through or whatever. It's 25 states now, Danny, where you cannot do to someone.
Can't do it.
What A.J. Brown did to Emmanuel Forbes the last time these two teams played. I'd like to think that they can devise a plan to slow those guys down. I'm just not confident in it. And here's my reasoning. Because they've got to load the box still. They have to slow down Saquon Barkley. This is the issue when you play Philly. Barkley is having a banner first year with the Eagles. He is second in the NFL in scrimmage yards, 1149. He is second in the NFL in rushing yards, 991, on the verge of 1,000 already in week 11. And he's playing Washington for the 10th time in his career. And wouldn't you know it, if you're a Commanders fan, I don't need to tell you this, Saquon Barkley feasts on this team. This is the club he has had his most success against of any team in the NFL. More scrimmage yards, 1164. More touchdowns, 8, against Washington than any other opponent. So I think you've got to, first and foremost, accommodate any kind of a run plan you have by getting some bodies down, maybe less too high safety stuff. That was the whole idea of bringing Lattimore over, is you let him play half of the field by himself. Well, not anymore. I think you got to help St. Juste. You got to help, certainly, Mikey Sanristil or possibly even Noah Igbinoghene, whoever's on Devontae Smith. I don't think you're going to travel St. Juste with A.J. Brown. They may. They've showed some willingness to do that, but I don't think that's going to work necessarily consistently. Although I think I like him more on A.J. Brown than I do Devontae Smith, just based on the size and the length and the physicality and some of those things. But it is a bad personnel matchup. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I don't feel good about this one at all for this big reason. They can't stop good wide receivers. Lattimore was supposed to help with that. They have not done it yet. I'll let you know when they do. Malik Nabers, 127 yards. Evans and Godwin, 13 catches, 2 touchdowns before they called off the dogs and just handed it off. Jamar Chase, 120 yards, multiple touchdowns. Zay Flowers, 9 for 172.5. They can't stop good wideouts. So, no, I have no confidence at all that I think any kind of plan is just writing on a wall at this point. Like, this to me is a terrible matchup for them. If I was to design a team and an offense that this particular Washington defense as constructed could not handle, it would be this one. You already mentioned it. Dynamic running back that can do everything, that can run for power, run for speed, and catch the ball. Receivers on the outside that force you to honor everything else. A tight end that's not necessarily a playmaker anymore. Goddard runs kind of like I do after a workout. Not real effectively, but still is crafty and underneath and can do some things. And a quarterback that can escape danger and carry it in his own right in Hurts. This is the kryptonite to what was already a pretty, you know, pedestrian, okay, even mediocre at times unit. I have zero confidence in their ability to stop Philadelphia.
Yeah, I get that. And I am also worried about the matchup defensively. That is different, I should say, than whether or not I give them a chance to win the game. Because going back to Cincinnati, the reason I was so high on them against Cincy going into that game, and while I didn't think they were going to win outright, the reason I 100% thought they'd cover and thought it would be tight and thought they could win was I thought they were going to move the ball on Cincinnati throughout the game. Now, the Eagles' defense is actually playing at a very, very high level statistically. In fact, 5-game winning streak since their Week 5 bye, the Eagles' defense over that time ranks number one in scoring and number one in yardage. And their plus 82-point differential over their last 5 games, all wins, is second best to Detroit. So they've been cooking. But they're not playing anybody. That's also part of this. Their opponents in that 5-game span are the Browns, who had a broken offense with Deshaun Watson, the Giants, who Washington's seen twice, not a good offense, the Jaguars and the Cowboys both can't manage to move the football with any consistency. The only good offense they've played or good quarterback they played in that time is Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. And I'm not sitting here doing throwing stones with my glass house. I'm not pretending like Washington's beat a bunch of good teams. But I am telling you that in this 5-game winning streak, the Eagles have beaten 5 teams with a combined 13-35 record. And that everyone's now crowning this defense under Vic Fangio, which I think is good. Legitimately, yeah. I think they are good. Do I think they're as great as they've played? Do I think they're as dominant as they've looked the last 5 weeks? No, because this is by far the best offense they've faced in that time. So I'll tell you what I think about this defense, I guess, in about 36 hours. Like, at the end of the game, I'll say, yeah, they're really good, or, see, I told you so.
In Philly, they're talking, they're going, hey, this is one of their toughest tests of the year. Cincinnati, which they passed, Cincinnati's offense is really good, Burrow's having a prolific year. But the discussion is, okay, now can you handle this one? We're going to find out how, quote-unquote, good our defense is, because you got to deal with Washington.
But I do think it's going to take 34 points, 31 points.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be Cincinnati 2.0, a primetime night game where Jaden Daniels has to go ball out like he's in Baton Rouge playing Alabama in the SEC under the lights. I mean, it's going to be that kind of vibe, that kind of feel. Either he's spectacular or they probably don't have much of a chance. Because the answer to the question we're asking people for me is, will they be able to defend Brown and Smith? Well, I say no. I think Brown goes for 100. I think Smith goes for 60. Like, I think the Eagles move the football and have plenty of production, enough that they're going to feel good about winning when they look at their box score at the end of the game offensively. And then it's just up to, can Washington's offense, which has been more efficient than almost every offense in the sport other than Baltimore for most of this year, be great again, like it was really prior to two of the last 3 weeks, let's say, as they've leveled off some statistically a little bit. But I'll give Jalen Hurts credit, too, because a couple of years ago he was amazing, went all the way to the Super Bowl, MVP candidate. I thought he outplayed Mahomes in the Super Bowl. Mahomes was good. He was great. You know, easily could have won a title game. Last year, I thought he was mostly the reason for their offensive woes. I thought he struggled a ton. Have you seen his numbers since the bye week?
They're eye-popping.
I mean, he has been sensational. He's been, this is their last five games now post-bye. 16 combined touchdowns and one interception for him. He's looking to become the third quarterback ever to post six consecutive games with a quarterback rating over 115. And he is on fire right now. So I am worried about this secondary without Lattimore. No doubt about that. Let's go to, is it Rami in D.C. on G&D? What's up? How are you? Ronnie, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is Ronnie. What's up, guys?
Hey, buddy.
The only chance we got with our defensive backfield against the Eagles tomorrow is if we bring Darryl Green's jersey down out that rafter and replace him and replace that boy, St. Juice. I don't know why he's still on this team. But I'm thinking that if we can score enough points, just like you guys are saying, we can score enough points that we can get ahead of these guys and we'll beat them 32-31.
It's going to have to be a shootout. I agree with you. I don't even know if you got to be out in front as much as, you know, you could go back and forth or come from behind. Do you agree with me, though, Danny? It's really hard-pressed to see them winning a game where they don't score upper 20s at least.
Now, weird stuff happens in the NFL where you look at, you know, an over-under will be in the 50s, and then, you know, both teams can't get a first down.
Especially on Thursday night.
Yeah.
Like, the Eagles could go for a 4th-and-2 and not get it, and then you could pick them off inside the 10, and next thing you know, they've got 3 points with 4 minutes to go in the half or something.
Yeah.
That could happen.
But on paper, This is a shootout as shootouts get on, you know what I mean? Like, just in terms of the construction, I don't see them winning this game without being in the mid-30s. Because, right? I think when I would treat it as this. When they have the ball, this is like prime Kansas City territory. Not the current Kansas City, which scores like 10 points a game. But prime Kansas City, I would treat every punt as points for them in some way. And I'm holding to field goals is a victory in that regard.
Yeah, I think that there's a path to winning this game, maybe like 27-20 is as good as I can say defensively I could see them playing. That would take bowing up in the red zone, to your point, in a way that they really have not been. I mean, that's going to have to happen at some point here. They got to start turning some of the touchdowns they're giving up into field goals. But if they could turn Philly over a couple times, you know, in plus territory, if you could force a field goal or two rather than giving up sevens, now all of a sudden on four drives inside that 30 and in strike zone, maybe you got 6 points to show for it, something like that. Now it's 20 instead of 30 at the end of the game, and maybe you could win that way. But I do think it feels to me like if Washington wins, it's going to be 34-30. If the Eagles win, it's probably like 30-20, you know, 27-23, something like that. Go to Jay, who's in D.C. Do you think the secondary can bow up here without Lattimore?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
All right. Hey, first of all, I don't think you can actually stop these guys, those two guys on the corner. I think you just have to contain them. You can't give them a two-way go. You can't let them beat us passing the ball and running the ball. You have to take something away. You have to take one or the other, and that's what we didn't do against Baltimore. We let them have the running game and the passing game. Take something away and live with the results. The thing that I think that we have going for us is the fact that this is a division rival game, right? Division rival games are pretty much always closer in outcomes. What we have in our favor is this is not a brand new coach who is new to the rivalry. Dan Quinn and Joe Witt and those guys have seen the Philadelphia Eagles for the past 3 years. This will be the third year, I think, you know. But the past 3 years, they haven't had drop dead or knockout corners. They've played them with De'Ron Bland and those guys, you know, and look at what they're doing now. So I think they can divide
at one point in time. Thanks for the call.
Appreciate you.
Did lead the league in interceptions, though. I mean, it's not like they've done it with dudes off the street. I mean, Bland got paid. Like, you're talking about some decent cornerbacks. But I agree with you. Like, they can devise a plan. The problem is this group that they're coaching here in D.C. right now has been a problem against quality wide receivers. This past week, George Pickens, who most of the year has been a non-factor for the Steelers, it's gotten better in their passing game with Russell Wilson. But wasn't huge. It's not like he went for 100. He got close, I think, 90 yards and touchdown. But he was an issue in that game. There was one receiver you had to worry about, just one. And they couldn't figure out how to get him, after a good first half, to stay quiet in the second half.
Yeah, I think there was a good plan on the play that St. Juice gave up a 15, 16-yard cushion to Mike Williams where he got beat deep for a touchdown. I bet you the plan was excellent on that play. Don't get beat for a touchdown. What can you do about that? Go back as far as you humanly as humanly possible to give the guy a cushion and space. Still ran by him. So, to me, like, plans are important, and I'm all about it. And we can see the impact this coaching staff has had on the other side of the ball, specifically with the offense. But I think there's the best, greatest plan in the world doesn't matter with this coverage group.
Yeah, I would say their plan was probably better than the result and the execution when Pickens ran through like four tackles for 32 yards on that one player. He was like hopping around and jumping in the air and putting his knee out like it was Antonio Brown. Remember that?
Yeah.
That should have been a 15-yard gain or less. You know, Quan Martin flying up, making the tackle. Plan was okay. They just needed to execute that better. And the question is, will they be able to? 800-636-1067. We'll talk to Jody McDonald, who covers the Eagles, coming up at 3 o'clock in about 20 minutes. There is a quarterback being made, a change, rather, being made in the NFL. A team is going back to a youngster to try to ignite its offense. We'll tell you about that next on Grant and Danny. Shane Steichen and the Colts are going back to the well. They are benching Joe Flacco for Anthony Richardson. Just a couple of weeks ago, they benched Anthony Richardson for Joe Flacco. It did not work. The Colts lost consecutive games. Flacco played badly, including three interceptions and a pick six against the Bills in a 10-point loss this past week. Remember, they could not move the ball at all. Their defense was great against the Vikings 2 weeks ago. And in both of those losses, it felt like if they could have just made a couple more plays offensively and gotten anything more out of the quarterback position, maybe they would have won. Well, Anthony Richardson, who had been bad enough that when they benched him, I thought it made sense, is now going to get another shot. And I think this is the right way to go, not only because you need to develop him, but they're 4-6. And at least for the moment, the playoffs are out of the question. So you're playing the Jets coming up, a little bit of a soft landing spot. Their defense is not as good as it once was. That's a bad football team. Then you've got a much tougher game against the Lions, and then another soft matchup with the New England Patriots going into a bye week before your stretch run. So it's time to find out if you're the Colts, if Anthony Richardson's the guy you want to go forward with, if you're Steichen and Ballard at the end of this season, or if you're going to be in the market for a quarterback, which is seemingly perpetually what they have been in the market for over the last 8 years.
Yeah, a handful of years. I mean, you're hoping for this, for a similar bounce back that Bryce Young experienced, right? Where you're in the line, you're in the game, everything's going too fast, you're non-competitive, it's just a disaster when you're dropping back to throw the ball, you're lost. You get some time away from the starting lineup, away from the pressure, and when you re-enter the game, re-enter the you know, as the starter, you perform a lot better. Now, Bryce Young's not great, hasn't been awesome, but like it now looks like an NFL quarterback doing things, whereas it quite simply did not before. And at times for Richardson, who came in raw, is still raw, it was probably snowballing on him a little bit, right? Where it's just it starts to get away from you, then you're pressing, trying to do something great, and it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And then to the point, just like we're talking about with Bryce Young, it was non-competitive. So if Joe Flacco was lighting it up, doing what he did last year in Cleveland, this wouldn't be a conversation. But he was, you know, all the bad plays without anything dynamic to boot. Like, there's no escaping Joe Flacco running outside the pocket and making back-breaking play against the opponent. It's just stand there and take sacks or throw picks. I got a guy that can do that already, and it's the guy that hopefully, if I'm a Colts fan, is my future. So it makes sense. I mean, they're a game out of the postseason right now, but the way they're playing, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, I don't think you can worry about where you're at in the standings when you're playing as badly as they are. Also, I get turned off by analysts that scream at the team when they do something like this as if they're breaking some rule that doesn't exist. And what I mean by that is you're seeing this all over the country. The most obvious recent example is my guy we've had on the show a couple times because I love him, Louis Riddick. Louis Riddick is like personally offended, it seems like, that they have benched Anthony Richardson. To the point where he's talking about like whether they have jobs and should have jobs, it seems like, and he's so upset about this. And I don't really understand that. There's a difference between a young guy not playing that well and a young guy that's giving you no chance. Like, we have all seen it. Bryce Young with Carolina is a great example. You referenced him. There was a difference between, hey, you probably shouldn't bench your number one pick last year when you're bad and you need to be developing him, and this offense cannot function the way he is playing right now. I don't mean like we can't score points or gain yards. I mean we can't possess the football. We can't get in and out of the huddle. We can't get first downs. We can't gain any yards to even have drives. Like, this is embarrassing. Our receivers, our line, everyone involved is not developing and can't do it because this guy is so incompetent. That was the level of quarterback play they were getting at one point. They sat him down. He watched for a handful of weeks, and he's playing much better. You're allowed to do that. I mean, that is a decision you have to make. We also don't know what we don't know in the building. And you never hear people mention that. I remember this with, I always hate talking about the late Dwayne Haskins because he's no longer with us. But I remember the same kind of deal where a lot of analysts and Riddick went in on Jay Gruden, I remember. But a lot of people came out and were just furious that Washington had moved on from Haskins. But they don't know that he's not showing up when he's supposed to show up, that he's not putting in the work behind the scenes that he's supposed to put in, right? And, like, the coaches sometimes know that. And I don't know if that's the case with Anthony Richardson or not. Might be the hardest-working guy in the world. I'd imagine if that was the case, they wouldn't have benched him. I also think the fact that he asked out and said he was tired is part of why he got benched, by the way, whether they'll ever admit that or not. But, Danny, do you know what percentage of passes he's completing this year?
It's sub-50 now, isn't it?
Take a guess.
It's like 48%.
44%. 44%.
It's not 83 either.
What,
like, this is a different time.
About,
yeah. I mean, he struggled.
In his career, do you know what percent of passes he's completing?
47?
50%.
Yeah, right on the nose.
I don't even, like, those numbers shouldn't be possible. That's Tim Tebow stuff, who was not a quarterback, moonlighting as a quarterback. So, to me, it wasn't some personal thing that they benched the guy. I like that they're going back to him and giving him a shot. I also find it comical that everyone said, why are they playing him? He needed to sit and watch. And then they bench him and he sits and watch. And they're going, why are they benching him to let him sit and watch? They need to be developing him. So it's kind of like they can't win, it seems like, with Anthony Richardson. But I hope he plays better, because I will say, physically, if you like want to do a competition where what quarterback can throw the ball the fastest into a wall, velocity, he'd probably win. What quarterback can throw the ball the farthest in the air, he'd probably win. What quarterback can run the fastest, he'd be in the top five. Like, his tools are louder than the metal concert that Chris went to last night in Baltimore to see Iron Maiden. I mean, his tools are louder than metal at his, like, screaming to his buddy next to him at a show.
I mean, beyond intriguing for that reason. He was, and everyone knew he was so raw. There's no other way to put it. Like, didn't have a ton of quarterback experience. The numbers weren't eye-popping at Florida. There were struggles, but you go, they just don't make people that are that big, that strong, that fast, who have that kind of cannon for an arm. It's like Cam Newton is one, and Richardson's probably two, and he's like a 2.0 athletic version of Newton, right? Like, so, yeah, you probably needed some patience here. There's no, you know, in a right now league, this is like a weird thing. Like, if you were terrible and drafted him with a long view, we're thinking years, not week to week, then it might have been a better situation, a better spot. This is like a team that's built to win, that's got a pretty good set of personnel, with a developmental quarterback that really needs to be developed. It's not like he needs a little bit of seasoning. No, this guy needs a lot of work, but it's worth doing, presumably because of the traits, but you don't have time to do it until you do, now that Joe Flacco's come in and gone in the bed. It's, the whole thing is bizarre, to be honest with you. I'm not angry at anybody, but it's just one of those, like, yeah, you drafted a raw quarterback, the raw quarterback showed up, and we seem not really sure what to do about that. I mean, it was one of those maybe should have thought of it before you picked him.
I agree. I just, and this is hard to quantify, I think there's a difference between a raw quarterback and the way he's played. Like, it's been really bad. I mean, it's been really, really bad. And he like to the point where he shouldn't be playing at this point, kind of bad. And I don't know how long you give a guy like that. Like, even the guys that don't work out generally don't look that bad. Or the guys that you play that aren't ready. Like, supposedly Drake May, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to sit. He needs a year. He's the same kind of deal, right? He's a project. They do not look the same. When you watch Anthony Richardson play football and you watch Drake May play football, that's not the same thing. Drake May, who's the youngest quarterback in the league, I think Richardson's ultra young too, by the way, looks far advanced. 4 weeks into his career, whatever he is, 8 weeks, 10 weeks into his career. So, I don't know. I just, they're in a weird spot with him, though, because you started him before you probably should have.
Mm-hmm.
Then you benched him and you're going back to him. And now you got to make a pretty big decision pretty quickly on him going into this offseason. So you need as much data as possible. Jody McDonald's going to join us next. We will scout the Eagles. By the way, it is a Wizards Wednesday on Grant and Danny. So we've got tickets that will be given away today at 4 o'clock ahead of the Beltway Blitz right here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.